But you are heading out to G2E. Will this be your first ever flight by yourself?
Yeah,
Do
unless somebody wants to come
you
with
need
me.
to hire someone to accompany you, a guardian of some sort?
I think the airline takes care of that for unaccompanied people, right?
Well, unaccompanied minors is the term.
Oh, not just regular, not just anybody.
Unaccompanied 53-year-olds is not a thing. Welcome to another episode of Low Rollers, a gambling industry podcast hosted by two dudes who have never exchanged messages on the Signal app with either of the Winklefi. I am one of those two dudes, Eric Raskin. I am joined by the other dude, Jeff Edelstein. We are writers for Casino Reports, Lottery Geeks, InGame, etc. And one of us also has a Substack where this week I learned that one of us has a zero tolerance policy with regard to mayo on an Italian hoagie. Now, I should note, I don't eat the various meats anymore, so I wouldn't be an
Right.
Italian hoagie guy anyway. But I am generally a fan of mayo. So I must know, Jeff, are you wholly anti-mayo or you're just anti-mayo for this particular type of sandwich?
If you put mayo on an Italian hoagie, it's troublesome. It
Yes.
makes me like, you know, I it's you're in my notebook, I'll put it that way.
Okay.
As far as like, yeah, I will never like put mayo on a sandwich ever. I think it's kind of gross. Like I like you'll never see me slathering mayo on bread.
Okay.
Mayo, like I will allow mayo in tuna fish
Okay,
because
that's
that's
what I was
part
going to
of like
ask.
the
Do you
recipe.
do the salads that have mayo in them? Okay, right.
So yeah, I'm not even a big fan of anything besides tuna with mayo. Like
So
I
chicken
allow my
salad, not a big fan.
nah
Okay, all
nah
right, all right.
I'll allow mayo in tuna and in things that I don't know mayo's in.
Now, so that's now that brings up an interesting point. If someone put just a little mayo on your Italian hoagie and you didn't know it was there, maybe it could sneak by you.
It could, if there's a little bit of mayo, it might sneak by me. But like, if I see it,
Right.
I will throw the sandwich away.
Yes, as you said in your Substack, that's a
I was
shame. You're
so
not gonna
upset.
ask, does anyone else want this Italian hoagie with mayo?
No, there's too much anger at that point. It's just straight in the trash. Oh God, it was so upsetting.
Listen, we all have our things, our places we draw the line. That's one of
That's my
yours.
line. Yeah,
Okay.
and putting mayo on an Italian hoagie again. That to me. It is like not all the Ten Commandments even like we don't even need all of them anymore.
Right.
That should be added.
Right.
I think that should be very high on the list.
I'll give you a week to think about it. Next week, let me know which commandment we're eliminating to include thou shalt not put mayo on an Italian
Okay,
hoagie.
yeah,
All right.
I'll come up with a few.
Okay.
But before I do that, we have an
Yes.
interview with John Pappas of Corridor Consulting. John, you know, so well connected in this gambling world, a lot to say today. But before we do that, of course, as always, Eric, plenty o news to discuss.
Yeah, and we start this week with the unfortunate, if I guess fairly predictable, news that the Fair Bet Act, Representative Dina Titus's effort to undo the tax deduction change for gamblers, did not get tacked onto the defense budget as Titus had hoped. Republicans have the majority in the House. That party has final say in the Rules Committee. And even though there was some bipartisan support for the Fair Bet Act, it was left out. And so it appears gamblers will head into 2026 hopeful that by the end of the year, this could be changed and their ability to earn a living will ultimately not be impacted, but they won't really know. And that makes it challenging to decide whether you can or cannot make a decent living as a gambler. Jeff, your thoughts on the fact that the Fair Bet Act appears, for now, dead.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm a little surprised because they're, you know, when you tack these things onto other bills, they always seem to like go through, or at least the ones that you hear about go through.
Once they get tacked on, I guess it's we don't always hear about the ones that are considered for
I
tacking
guess,
on. Yeah.
right. One thing popped out at me though while I was thinking about this, and it's prediction markets, right? I asked a gambler friend of mine. Who will remain nameless? I said to them, "Am I going to give him
A gender. Wow, look
a
at you.
gender?"
Okay. All
Yeah,
right.
I said to them, "You know, what does that hold water? Do you think like will it work?" And they said, "Well, yeah, it will work in theory because you're not being taxed as a sports bettor when you place wagers on event contracts, whatever. You're being taxed
Right.
as in capital gains. So there is like an out there. Obviously, there's not as many ways to get money down on, points. Now they have point spreads and total. So but as it grows, it'll grow. But th this better did say this, and it doesn't really hold water. Since, and I will quote here, most gamblers don't pay their taxes anyway. End quote.
Ah, so there's that.
So there's that. Yeah, I don't know. It's the dumbest, well, dumbest. It's one of the craziest tax laws I've ever encountered, right? Where you can theoretically, well, very easily theoretically, lose money doing something. I mean, again, like let's say you own a business. Jeff's, trinkets, and I bought $1 billion in trinkets, and I sold $900 million in trinkets. I'm gonna have a $100 million loss, but I have to pay taxes on that. That's insane. It just doesn't make any sense, And so for that reason alone, I would have thought that this thing would have been over and done with already. But what the hell do I know? And yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you really want to go tinfoil. Maybe this is, the Donald Trump Jr., got in the ears of all these people and said, yeah, let's make prediction markets the only way to play. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not going down that route, but
No,
I'm just saying.
it requires several rolls of tinfoil to get there,
Yeah.
but I like it as a random throw it out there theory. But
Why not?
yeah, no, I mean, right there. So you hit on the main thing that there just really is no rational defense for having this new law in place. I think people can debate what the practical impact will turn out to be, but just on principle. As you outlined with your Jeff's trinkets example, it is just asinine and goes against all logic.
When's your anniversary, by the way? Your wedding anniversary?
I'm not sure why you're asking, but I guess I'll find out. May 29th, got a
Oh, so
little while.
you have time. But if you need something, if you're looking for something special, Jeff's Trinkets might have it for you.
I won't tell my wife I shopped at Jeff's Trinkets. It doesn't sound high class, no offense.
No, it's none taken.
Okay. So, bringing up this idea that prediction markets could offer sports bettors an alternative and could lessen the blow for them, I think that's a good point. But one community of gamblers that doesn't have any sort of silver lining here that really seems devastated by this is poker players.
Yeah.
Phil Hellmuth, star of the old Gamble On intro, called it the poker players' death tax. I mean, look, as we know, many gamblers get by on thin margins. Even a great poker player can have a year where they pretty much just break even. And so then to owe money at the end of the year when you have no positive income, it's enraging on principle, even if we don't know yet quite what the practical impact is going to be.
Yeah, which is why I am offering, $35,000 franchise opportunities for people looking to get into Jeff's Trinkets. So if you know any poker players that are looking to, subsidize their income, just have them give me a
Right.
buzz.
Yeah. No, I
It's a
like the way
turnkey.
I don't know what a turnkey is, but sure, it sounds good.
Yeah, neither do I.
But as long as you brought up prediction markets, kind of significant news there this week that Predictit is officially in the game, registered with the CFTC. They've been all about elections in the past, but it'll be interesting to see if they get into sports too. I mean, why wouldn't they, right?
Why not?
Yeah.
Although, I mean, they were just a pure like academic play, like when it
Initially,
started, right? Old enough to remember when people were touting prediction markets as economic hedges.
Right. Yes, that's what they were once framed as, and still, they still, in a court of law, attempt to frame themselves as
Right.
such. But
Well, I love, how can like the Reds Brewers game have, and it be an economic edge? Well, if you own a bar in the Cincinnati area, and I mean, it's like, well, I guess you're right. It is an economic edge when you look at it that way, but fuck off,
Yes. It's a shame. No, it's a shame the lawyer for the state of New Jersey didn't end with that as the closing argument. Yes, but fuck off. But yeah, I was looking at some of the numbers that were quoted in one of our articles on this. Predicted is, at least for now, not even small potatoes, like tiny microscopic potatoes compared to Kalshi and Robinhood and Polymarket in terms of user base. I wonder if they like had a window to have been the dominant U.S. election betting site
Right.
and that window is closed, even though they're now gonna be certified by the CFTC. But also, as we discussed with Joel Simkins last week, the great majority of people have never heard of any of this stuff. They know
Right.
Robinhood, but not Kalshi, Polymarket, Predictit. This is really only in our world.
You gave me another great business idea because now that I'm thinking
Ooh,
about it,
all
very
right.
small, tiny, tiny, tiny potato sounds delicious. You could like
Microscopic
spoon.
Jeffs.
Yeah,
Do
you
we
could
want
like
a
spoon them
Jeffs in
in.
front of it again, though? Jeff's
I think we
microscopic.
should.
All
Jeff's microscopic micros. I can't pronounce it. So let's just go with Jeff's tiny potatoes and Jeff's trinkets and tiny potatoes. It's a
Oh,
just it's
really?
a
A wide range of products available.
trinkets and tiny potatoes. You can't.
All
I
right, all
mean,
right. I'm buying a franchise. I'm in.
for
It is
you,
tur
30.
it is turkey, as I
It
understand.
is for you, 34-6.
Great. Appreciate it. All right, one other news item to cover here. The Powerball jackpot hit on Saturday, as one kind of starts to expect it to when there are an estimated 258 million tickets sold. The odds of any ticket winning are 1 in 292 million, so you're well into that range where it's actually more likely someone wins than no one wins. In this case, two someones won, one in Texas and one in Missouri. None in Pennsylvania nor New Jersey, we will note. They split the $1.787 billion jackpot. That comes out to $893.5 million each if they take the annuity, $410 million as a lump sum before taxes. Before you chime in, Jeff, I'll just note that yes, I did buy lottery tickets for the first time in my life. Five tickets, $10, Saturday morning, waited in line for the machine at the Wawa behind a few people. Two of my tickets matched one number. That was the best I got. So I will not be giving you $2 million cash as a share of my jackpot win. And I guess I will not be receiving $2 million from you either.
I bought my tickets at my favorite titled store in my area. It's called Win, Place, or Smoke,
Oh, fancy.
where all your tobacco and lottery needs available there. Alas,
I
I
heard they're going out of business though, and they're Jeff's Trinkets is going to replace. I'm sorry, a Jeff's Tiny Potatoes and Trinkets is going to replace them.
can't comment on that. I lost as well. Didn't win the Powerball.
Okay.
I had been buying tickets for the last three Powerballs, which I hadn't bought lottery tickets in a billion years, and a net loss of $6. So that's
Over the course of three drawings, net loss of $6. All right, that's not too bad. All right.
So I actually got the Powerball twice,
Okay.
failed to match it with any white balls.
Right.
I didn't win. I was. It's weird when you buy a lottery ticket, and so this is the first time you bought one, is that right? In your whole
Yes.
life.
Yes. First
Did
time I, yeah.
you allow yourself to, I mean, did you, it's just,
Of
it's
course.
weird holding that ticket and being like, well, maybe,
Yeah.
you know?
Absolutely. It's the same thing as as every time I make a DFS lineup that, and
Right.
these are slightly longer odds, but only slightly,
Right.
in terms of if you're rooting for first place. But it's the same thing. It's like, yeah, I know, I know this probably isn't going to win, but there's a chance.
Maybe,
Maybe this is it. And you start to think about the. Mostly, I was thinking about giving you $2 million. That was really my motivation. And
Wouldn't it
I'm
have been
sorry.
nice? It would,
Would have felt so good.
yeah. Ugh, yeah. It's hard to get that feeling, you know. Like it's just
Right.
you don't know that feeling unless you get it, or unless your tiny potato business takes off. Like you just there's just no way to know.
Can we call it ironic that one of the winners was in Texas? I don't know what counts as ironic anymore, ever since Alanis Morissette kind of ruined the word, but someone in Texas is very happy that Patrick and Abbott didn't succeed in banning all lottery play in the state.
That's very true. It's an obscene amount of money.
It
It's
is.
just it's a crazy amount of
Although,
money.
again, 410 million and you pay
Right.
taxes, what are
Yeah,
you
I guess.
really left with?
Sure.
250, 275? I mean,
The one positive aspect about getting older is that like my number to say fuck it all is going
oh,
down,
your
right?
magic number to use sports terms.
Yeah, I'm not talking about like what I'm saving retirement. That's I don't want to talk about that. I'm talking about like, you know, I win a Millie Maker, right? I can't really stop working, but I'm getting pretty close to being able
Right.
to
It sh
stop
it
working.
shaves it shaves some years off the amount of
It
time
really
you have to keep
does.
working, right?
So
Yeah, that's
I'm
interesting.
going
I never really thought about that, but it is true that yeah, the amount that we need to last us the rest of the time we're going to be here.
to. Yeah. By the time I'm like 92, I just need like three cans of cat food in the cupboard and I'm gold. No mayo in that tuna.
No. There you go.
Yeah,
Wow, that was a great callback, full circle. That's a perfect note on which to move it along to our guest. We now welcome to the podcast a man who I guess I've known for nearly 20 years, since the dawn of the Poker Players Alliance, back when we were both hating on the UIGEA from our separate vantage points. He is now the CEO of Corridor Consulting and a senior advisor for GeoComply, and a guy who knows public affairs and government relations with regard to the gambling world as well as anyone. John Pappas, welcome to Low Rollers.
Eric, Jeff, great to be with you guys. 20 years is kind of remarkable, but we are approaching the 20-year anniversary of UGIA. It's 2006, a very fateful weekend for a lot of people in the gaming industry.
Yeah, feels like we've just set the stage to definitely invite you on the podcast again next year for the 20th anniversary for some still frustrated 20 years later type of memories about that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And not too far off of that is Black Friday, of course, in 2011. So a lot of really horrible milestones to celebrate over the next few years. So.
I guess, but then we can also do anniversary podcast conversations on when various states legalized online poker. There aren't too many, but there are a handful. So we should
There are.
balance with those. But for today, we'll talk about some other topics. And as I said, you're an advisor to GeoComply, and they had some data recently indicating that states that send cease and desist offshore operators see much more growth in regulated players and accounts than states that are passive about offshores. I'm curious, what do we do with this information? We meaning the collective industry. How do we act on this? Do the 50 AGs sending a letter to the DOJ really matter, et cetera?
Well, I think everything matters, right? And I think the data is interesting because I think it shows that enforcement actions aren't just happening in the ether. They actually do have some teeth to them, and they have material impact on the legal market, right? So I don't think we're going to eradicate offshore online gambling. Plus, there's plenty of new emerging forms of digital gambling that are out there that are always going to compete with the regulated market. But I think what this data is showing is that at least by the regulators taking these actions, these operators have either left the market voluntarily, like even on Bovada's site, you will see the states that they've listed and all of the five states that we compared to the five states that they don't. Bovada has said that they've left those markets and they are still operating in the others. And so we know that those consumers are migrating to the legal market in those states. And I think that's a powerful anecdote for regulators that, hey, what you're doing actually has an impact on helping grow your market. You mentioned, the DOJ. Federal enforcement would be the, ultimate. We talked a little bit earlier about, what happened on April 15th, 2011 with Black Friday. That was a federal enforcement action that took place that really changed the dynamic of the online poker industry in the US. So I don't think I think what the states are doing is a good start, but I do think some federal enforcement is going to be necessary at some point, and I think there's actually building momentum for that.
To what extent is it about scaring off the offshore operators versus to what extent, how much of this is about educating the public as to what's legal and what's not?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, right? Because when they take these actions, they put out press releases, they put out local news stories covering it, and I think consumers, when they see the headlines that state regulators issue cease and desist against XYZ operator, and they're like, well, wait a second, I have money on XYZ operator, and I think they either they're informed about, oh wait, we're actually betting on illegal platforms. And I think for most consumers, they don't know the difference between a licensed book versus an unlicensed book. I think the interesting thing with legalization, there's more awareness of gambling opportunities. So people are out there searching for things. And And oftentimes the offshore guys have better SEO than some of the onshore regulated books. So someone who's like, how do I bet on sports? They may find a link to a offshore sports book before they find a DraftKings or a FanDuel. So from a consumer standpoint, it's hard to blame the consumer. So I think from an industry standpoint, we have to educate them. And I think regulators are doing more and more of that. I saw more this year than I ever have of regulators issuing notices to consumers saying, hey, if you're going to bet this NFL season, make sure you bet with legal sports books. And here are the books that are licensed and regulated in the state. I saw that probably from more than half a dozen to a dozen state regulators put out notices like that this year.
You know, John, there's probably few people in the industry as tied into like the world of DC as you are. Obviously prediction markets have overtaken like the tongues of everybody. I mean, I feel like it's all we do at this point is talk about prediction markets.
And you guys have done a great job covering it, by the way.
Thank
Really, really good.
I'm still trying to figure out what the hell it exactly is. I'm learning every day. But I mean, what do you think? And I mean, this is almost an unfair question, but like I'm asking, what do you think is going to happen? And but I want you to put on like your DC hat and like knowing how things work, because this is, as it stands right now, I mean, it makes the Wild West look like kids play kind of stuff. So I mean, where does this end?
Well, I think it all ultimately does end in DC in that big building with white columns that, nine Supreme Court justices sit in, to be honest. Like, I think ultimately this is where this is headed. It's going to be the courts to make the decision on this. I don't see Congress acting. I mean, Congress is unable to do much of anything. This is certainly not an area where I think they're going to get involved, particularly with our current president and their, his family's connections to this industry. I doubt there'll be any legislative, and I doubt there'll be any regulatory action. Well, I mean, I guess it's moving so quick, and I know you guys are probably just like every day there's a another story, another lawsuit. I think all of it's noise, really, until courts start actually making decisions. Those decisions are going to be conflicting with each other in some cases, and ultimately, this is going to rise to the level of the Supreme Court, to weigh in and say, do states have jurisdiction over these types of derivative markets? Are these actually permitted derivative markets? And I think those are things that a court is ultimately going to have to decide.
And it's interesting to me because while I think the general consensus is, well, the courts leans right and, they would probably side. Well, I think the consensus is that the courts would agree that Kalshi and operators like that should be allowed to operate. But I also think that, this court has proven time and again states' rights is the be all end all. And if that's the case, then I could definitely see a world where they say, no, this is a states' rights case, and if New Jersey wants to say no to Kalshi, they have every right to do so. I mean, do you see it that way, or what do
Yeah,
you
I mean,
think?
it's hard. I can't predict what the court's going to say. And obviously a lot of what they're going to say is going to be based on what the lower courts are saying. So I think we need a little more time to kind of understand how judges are looking at this. And then I think that may inform, what happens at the next level. But we're probably talking a few years until this actually even gets to the Supreme Court, right? It may not even happen during this administration. So we're, it's a it's an interesting time to be in the industry, right? I think we've seen so much change happen since, the PASPA overturn, right? I mean, we're talking about poker. I mean, poker was everything for a decade, and now nobody's talking about poker. Everyone's talking about sports betting, and now everyone's talking about prediction markets, and and then online casino. So all of these, the things evolving. Who knows? In 2 years from now, there may be another digital gaming product that we're all talking about that no one's even thought about. So it's going to be an interesting couple years, and I'm watching it. And I honestly, I have no skin in the game. I want to see this get resolved. I think it's interesting from a public policy standpoint, as I'm talking to state lawmakers this past year, we would bring up this idea. Well, if you're not going to legalize sports betting, just know that there are alternatives that your consumers are getting. And it hasn't clicked yet with lawmakers. I think after this NFL season and how big it's gotten, I think this is going to be something that lawmakers will start clicking. It may actually lead to states like Georgia, and maybe eventually California or Texas saying, okay, well, we may not love the idea of sports betting in our state, but if we recognize that there are all these other forms of gambling that our residents are doing in a regulated, unregulated fashion, whatever, however you want to look at it, we ought to get on top of this, legalize it, make some tax revenue, make sure that we have some rules in place that we care about as lawmakers. And I think we probably are going to see a change going into next legislative season where this is going to be a talking point that lawmakers are actually going to make. You're going to hear in a committee hearing a lawmaker say, well, I was just on my phone and I was on this Kalshi app and I was able to bet on who was going to win the Super Bowl. How is that different than, if we legalize sports betting here in Georgia? So I'm certain of it.
So to coin a phrase, you're saying if you can't beat them, join
I mean,
them.
well, I mean, right. I mean, trust me, the emergence of daily fantasy sports in the mid 2000, 2014 to
Right.
2018, that helped drive the legalization of sports betting. There's no question in my mind, right? I mean, I think consumers, public's minds were changed about, what is acceptable and what's gambling. I mean, you would have, I would have never guessed 10 years ago that sports betting would be legal across, 39 states now. It just wasn't even fathomable, with the federal law as it was. But, what happened in 2018 changed everything. And I think daily fantasy sports help was a precursor to that. And maybe prediction markets will be a precursor to broader legalization of sports betting, maybe even casino and online gaming. If states feel like they're losing revenue from their legal sports betting, they're going to have to make it up by legalizing other forms of online gaming. It's going to be very interesting. I don't hate them. I think it's just, it's a very interesting thing that's going to, help be a way for lawmakers to realize that, hey, there's a whole lot of things that are happening on the internet. Either we get ahead of it and legalize things here and make them safe in our state and actually make some revenue, or we just put our head in the sand and it's just going to happen anyway.
Another topic calling upon your expertise as someone who knows how government works, it deals with a lot of government types. How does something like the Illinois per wager tax happen? Did that totally shock you when it went down? Do you feel like someone dropped the ball in failing to successfully lobby against that? What's your reaction when you see something like that go down?
I'm not going to point fingers at somebody who dropped the ball. I think what we have is lawmakers who kind of view this industry as a piggy bank, right? And that they can go to it at any point to raise more money. Oh, we have a deficit of $100 million. Well, we'll just raise sports betting taxes 2.5%, or we'll add on these types of fees. So I think there's and what's happened so far with industry is that they've argued against it, the increased taxes have happened, and then nothing changes on how they operate in the state. And so the lawmakers say, well, what is the consequence? There is no consequence. The operators would say, oh, the sky is going to fall if you do this, but the sky doesn't fall. And the only thing that happens is the state gets more money. And they're going to keep going back to that piggy bank. So I think the industry needs to demonstrate, like, hey, we have to put our foot in the sand and say, hey, we cannot absorb more taxes. Like we have, the 10% tax states are paying for the 51% tax states like New York. So it's a very vicious cycle if the industry starts accepting these and doesn't change their behavior. And I think what you're seeing in Illinois is a good step, right? A lot of the operators are saying, hey, well, we're going to have to charge the consumer. We're going to have to pass this on to the consumer. And then the consumer is going to say, well, wait, why am I being passed on? What did my state legislators do? I think that's a really important step towards letting lawmakers know that, hey, there are going to be some consequences if you keep coming after this industry and trying to tax it just to meet, whatever fiscal goal you have without really understanding the dynamics of how this industry works and how money is made and how these companies can be profitable.
So ultimately, to put a stop to states trying to do this sort of thing, we probably need to see a year where the receipts come in after this, and the state is actually, Illinois has proven to have made less tax money off sports betting than they were making the year before. Is that kind of what the industry should be rooting for here if they want this sort
Well,
of
no,
move to stop?
I think it'll be like slower growth, right? We'll see. And I can't predict what's going to happen in Illinois, but I think when Missouri goes online in the end of this year, that's going to have a material impact on Illinois. We already said GeoComply, as a geolocation company, they see where the pings are coming from. And a lot of Missouri players are geolocated in Missouri. And then, 20 minutes later, they're across the Illinois state line placing bets there, and then they're back in Missouri. So Illinois has been benefiting from Missouri not being legal. And I think now with Missouri going to have a lot more competitive market with, a much lower tax rate, a new market. So there's going to be a lot of bonusing and incentives. In Missouri, I think you're going to see a lot of those Illinois players now coming into Missouri and placing bets. So it could have a material impact. We'll have to see.
East Coast bias at work here. I didn't even know that Illinois and Missouri touched each other. So there you go.
Yeah, I
You don't
mean,
spend enough time in the heartland, Jeff.
no, I go as far west as Philadelphia. That's that's about it.
Well, and ending on a light topic for you here, John. I know you're DC based. Does that make you a Commanders fan?
I
Or do you...
moved to DC the year that Dan Snyder bought the team.
Okay.
So it has been a hard team to really root for, a hard ownership group. They've had some players along the way that I've liked. This new configuration of the team, though, it's pretty fun. My wife and my kids are actually Commanders fans. So
Okay.
I was born and raised in Arizona. You even know, Jeff, where Arizona is? That's on the
Right.
way west side of the states, way west
East,
side.
well, so east of Los Angeles, because
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
it. In my mind, it goes, New York, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, and then like just a big mishmash
Stuff
in
in
the middle.
between. Yeah, yeah.
So I still hold on to my Arizona Cardinals as like my number one team, but Jaden Daniels and they've got some great young talent that has come in here and some great veterans in DC. So it's making it a lot of fun
Jaden
to have it.
Daniels, watching that dude play, just watching that dude like exist brings my heart rate down. He's so like
He's
mellow and
very
calm.
calm. Yes.
So calm. I've
Yeah.
never seen an athlete like that in my
And
life. So
until,
yeah.
I'm an Eagles fan from Philly, and until the Eagles, had their way with them, thankfully, in the postseason last year. But coming into that game, I was basically dreading, oh no, the next decade or so of my life is going to be Jaden Daniels torturing me. And it still may be.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Eagles look pretty good too. It's not it's 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 fun to see the NFC East be fun again. And I think Jaden's probably the best quarterback in the NFC right now. I don't know. Isn't that crazy to say? He's the
In
only
the conversation, yeah.
second season, and he may be the best quarterback. We'll see. I think they got a big test against Green Bay, so see how they do on short rest. But yeah, I mean, I'm a huge sports fan. Unfortunately for me, like I said, I watch a lot of Arizona sports. I went to the University of Arizona, so I'm big University of Arizona sports fans. My games don't start until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night,
Right.
which makes it really rough to follow those games. But somehow I stay up. A little bourbon never hurts.
And not to add to Jeff's geographical confusion, but when I was a kid, the Cardinals were in the NFC East. So
That's
they, for some reason, they were a rival of Washington, Philly, and New York in the NFC East. So
Yeah.
I guess Dallas doesn't really make sense currently for the NFC East either. So
No, but well, Dallas doesn't make sense anyways. Just
yes, that's something we can all agree on.
yeah.
Well, great talking to you, John. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast, and we'll pre-book you for a UIGEA anniversary next year.
Sounds great. Good talking to you guys.
Thanks again to John. Great conversation there. A quick, appropriately low stakes, low rollers gambling anecdote for me here. On FanDuel on Sunday, I used a no sweat bet token for $10. I made some NFL bet. I forget what it was, but it lost. So during the Sunday night game between the Bills and Ravens, I had a bonus bet to use. And with the Ravens up 10-7 early, Bills about to punt, I started looking at some in-game odds, figuring, okay, let me just use this thing. Anything around plus 200 or more is fine for a bonus bet. I know real gamblers will say to aim bigger than that, but for me, whatever, $20, that'd be nice. So again, we're low rollers. So the Bills are plus 220 on the money line at the time. Felt like a good price to me. I also looked at touchdown scorers. A couple of guys had already scored and were off the table, but I'm looking at Josh Allen, Lamar, Cook, Keon Coleman. Thinking they're all good plus money bets, even though I think some of those were under plus 200. But whatever, I'm looking at all these bets for a minute or two, and ultimately, I don't pull the trigger. I decide, I'll just make a baseball bet the next day instead. And of course, every single bet I considered Sunday night would have won, and the three-leg parlay that I made the next day lost. And so it just got me thinking about how you place a bet and it loses, you forget all about it 5 minutes later, but you almost place a bet. And you don't place it and it wins, you dwell on it for a lot longer than 5 minutes. So that's all. I'm not saying anything particularly profound, just kind of rambling about regrets and how they haunt you, even if all you did was cost yourself $20.
Speaking of that, so I'm a DFS player, as everybody knows. And
Yes,
when week
yes.
one salaries came out about 6 weeks ago, I immediately built a few placeholder lineups, and every single one of them included Justin Fields of the Jets. Of course, come Sunday morning this past week, I had about 175 lineups spread across all the DFS sites. And I think I had one lineup that had Fields in it. I went off of him because, duh, the Steelers Jets game was going to be it's a slog. Nobody was hyping Fields. And, obviously, 66 points later, Fields was the second highest quarterback on the slate. If I had stuck to my guns, well, I wouldn't be a Powerball billionaire, but I'd certainly have a few more shekels to my name. Alas, you win some, you lose the vast majority. The Low Rollers podcast has been brought to you by Jeff's Trinkets and Tiny Potatoes. And until next week, we are Low Rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.